I wanted a manageable number. I didn't want to do 1,000 films. I wanted to do a number that people could potentially see. If someone wanted to see them all, it wouldn't kill them to see them all. And then I thought, well, I'll do something in the 50s, alliterated with film, alliterated with favorite. I thought 52, 55, 57. I said, well, why not 54? And then I thought nothing more of it. I thought that was a random choice. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, I said, how many films? And I said 54. And he said immediately, he said three times chai. Chai is a Hebrew word. It has two definitions. It means the number 18 and it means life. So in the Jewish tradition, then any multiple of 18 is a lucky number. 18, 36, 54, 72, those are all lucky numbers. And since I was raised in a traditional Jewish home, I knew this, and it just subconsciously it came out. I thought I picked 54 for no reason, but I picked it because it was three times high.
In this book, you have a marvelous quote from Roger Ebert, who was one of, I think, the masters. His writing was so wonderful. And that is, every great film should seem new every time you see it. Boy, what a tall order, huh?
Yeah, there's not a lot of films that can do that. And again, you know, this is all personal. This is the films that I feel that way about. I saw all 54 of these films again before I wrote about them, just specifically to write about them. And I was as excited by them as the first time I saw them. Mm. You know, it's a wonderful feeling.
One of my favorites out of all of these, and that's, you know, how do you say that out of 54, but The Lady Eve.
Oh, yeah.
With Barbara Stanwyck, Henry Fonda, and Stanwyck never sexier than in this movie.
She's amazing. There's a scene early in the film in the stateroom in an ocean liner between her and Henry Fonda, and the byplay between them, it's jaw-dropping. Yeah. And the more I see it, the more I'm aware of how seamless it is, of how impeccably it's constructed, directed, acted. It's just a perfect piece of cinema.
And how they got some of the stuff through the censors of the time. You look at it, and it's not blatant at all like it would be today.
No. I mean, that's what you know, because of the censorship, they had to find ways around it. They had to be clever. They had to be witty. And the dialogue just sparkles.
Yeah. Preston Sturges.
Yes. One of the greats.
Name a couple of others that you, out of these 54, would really stick with you.
Well, Children of Paradise, a French film, is probably my favorite film. It's an epic romance. It's almost 3 hours long. It's about a woman and four very different men who fall madly in love with her. It's set in Paris in the early 1800s. It's just an epic and a romance. It's everything you want in a film. And, you know, there's another French film that I always think of called The Earrings of Madame Da. And it's by a man named Max Ophuls, who was a director known for his moving camera work. And it's a romance. A lot of my favorite films are romances, ill-fated romance. And there's scenes of where the two characters, Daniel Dario plays the woman, Vittorio De Sica plays the man. And it's a series of balls where they meet, and you see them dancing, and each dance kind of melds seamlessly into the last dance. And it's like a series of like a dozen dances, and the camera's twirling, and they're twirling, and it's just dazzling.
Do they, as they say, make them like that anymore?
No, they don't really. Sometimes they do, especially the people who don't make them like that anymore is Hollywood, really, more than anyone, because the dynamics of the studio system have changed. They have to make a profit. They have to appeal to overseas audiences as well. So this means kind of comic book movies, game movies, toy movies.
They're aiming towards 14-year-old boys.
They really are, because they can count on them. You know, they have nothing against aiming towards adults, but, you know, we're fussy. We don't want to necessarily go out unless we have a guarantee that something's going to be good. And younger people, they see a name, they see Jackass, they say they get online. They don't wonder, is this a good Jackass movie? Should I wait for the next Jackass movie? They're there.
You know, I could make an argument, I think, that TV, Mad Men, Breaking Bad, The Sopranos, The Walking Dead, are better than a lot of what's in the movie theater. If you would agree with that, what's happening to make that happen?
No, in Los Angeles, where both, you know, the movies and TV are headquartered, you hear that a lot. TV has taken over the movies. This is what's interesting now, and the movies are kind of yesterday. You know, obviously, TV's in a great moment now, and one advantage they have is the long form. They can play a storyline out over 12 hours in 40 hours. And, you know, The Wire is a TV series I love, and it plays out over 5 seasons, its storyline. So movies can't compete with that. But part of the reason TV is more interesting now is that TV has not given up on adults. Their economics are different, especially the pay cable channels, whose mandate is to do something different, whose mandate is to do something that people can't find elsewhere. That's why people subscribe to HBO and Cinemax and Showtime. They want to see something different. So while movies have abdicated their adult responsibilities, TV has stepped into the breach. And I think movies could be as interesting as TV, but they choose not to be.
And yet I think the cable pay model, that's going to be changing here a lot. I'm a cord cutter. I get my stuff from Apple TV and...
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to play out. I mean, we're really living in a transition era. I mean, that's a very good point. I don't know what's going to happen to those people when that happens. What's going to happen to HBO when people cut the cord? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a very good question. We're going to find out, but it's not at all clear how that's going to pay out.
Yeah. And you know what? I really don't like going to the movies, and it's because people are so inconsiderate. I don't want to hear their candy bar crack. I don't want to hear the exposition or their review as it's going along.
I know. You wish people had better manners. I mean, it seems like an old-fashioned thing to say, mm-hmm. but I think that's just the reality. In Los Angeles and around the country, there are now theater chains that specialize in a, like, elite experience, you know, where they charge more money and they police the theaters and the seats are better and there's no gunk on the floor and, you know, they stop people from talking. And, you know, those are hugely popular, but they're not, again, they're a small segment of the theatrical thing. It's sad what's happening to the theater-going experience. People are not enjoying it the way they used to. You know, I think back every once in a while you go to an old theater from the 20s, you know, one of these great movie palaces, and in those days it was mass and class. It was an elite experience for a lot of people, and I wish we could get back to that.
It was like flying.
Yeah.
And 3D. They tried to suck us back in, and they did that for a little while for a premium price in some theaters, What do you think?
Well, what happened with 3D is they killed the goose that laid the golden egg. 3D used well is still amazing. What started the current 3D boom was Avatar. And Avatar in 3D on a big screen was a phenomenal experience. Gravity in 3D was a phenomenal experience. But the problem is they want to put the words 3D up in an ad and charge more money. They don't care if 3D is well used. And if you misuse it or if you don't have a film that really needs it, people say, why did I spend this extra money? But in its place, 3D can do amazing things.
I would like to ask a question that may seem disrespectful, but it's not at all meant to be. In this age of Rotten Tomatoes and Facebook and Twitter, are professional movie critics relevant anymore?
I think so. I really don't feel that it's changed. I think people always want something that's well written. They want something that feels authoritative. They want to hear from someone who's seen a lot of films and who's done this. People want to hear an individual voice. I think you want more than just the number either Rotten Tomatoes gives you or that, you know, Metacritic gives you. You finally want to hear what a person says, what a person thinks, a person who's, you know, whose taste you follow, then you know how you correlate with that. I don't feel that that's going away. I really don't.
And you have a distinctive voice, literally and figuratively. How did you get hooked into National Public Radio, I'm assuming from the LA Times? Or?
Yeah, it was just happenstance. You know, I mean, I was at one point in time, you know, the LA Times sends me to Cannes, and Morning Edition was looking for someone to kind of be on the telephone with them to report on Cannes. And there weren't that many American journalists who were there. So they asked me if I wanted to, you know, talk to whoever the host was about Cannes. I said, sure. I did that, you know, for 2 or 3 years. And then they decided they wanted to make a change, hire a new critic on Morning Edition. And they thought of me because I'd worked with them at Cannes. And that's how it started.
Wow. Is it fun?
Oh, it's wonderful. Mm-hmm. I just love the radio. I don't know. I mean, I'm more interested in radio than television.
What's Cannes like? Is it a farce? Is it a spectacle? Is it a whole lot of fun?
It's all those things, you know. I mean, there's a great quote from Cannes that I've used before where someone who's been there a lot says, not only is Cannes impossible to describe to people who haven't been there, it's impossible to describe to people who have been there.
Best 2 or 3 films of this year so far?
You know, one of the films I think of is a film I saw at Cannes, which counts, and it'll come out in October. It's a film called Foxcatcher, directed by a man named Bennett Miller, who did Capote, who did Moneyball. He's a good young director. This is based on a true story of a member of the DuPont family, John DuPont, who was very wealthy, very eccentric, who in the early 1980s decided he was going to support the U.S. wrestling team, the Olympic wrestling team. And he did do that for a number of years, and a couple of gold medal winning wrestlers trained with him at his place in Pennsylvania that he called Foxcatcher. That's the name of the farm that he trained on. And he went crazy, and he murdered one of these wrestlers. It's an astonishing story. It's got a great cast. Steve Carell, a non-comedic role, looking completely different. You would not recognize him except for his voice. He plays the wealthy DuPont, And the two wrestling brothers are played by Mark Ruffalo and Channing Tatum.
Been speaking with Kenneth Taranla of the Los Angeles Times and National Public Radio, author of the new book, Not to Be Missed, 54 Favorites from a Lifetime of Film. It's a wonderful read-through. It's published by Public Affairs. Pleasure to meet you.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here.